This is Brian Meador from East Carolina University. You are listening to The Sports Objective, the official, unofficial podcast of the Pirates.
Welcome into the Sports Objective. Very special night as always, and anytime you can talk college football this time of year, the summertime. I'm Dave Richmond, and I want to give a shout out to our good friend Bubba Rosenbaum, who is actually calling a game tonight. He's actually doing summer league ball, PA, and producing at the same time. He's extraordinary. I'm lucky just to be able to be a host of a show and be on a show. And with us right now, our good friend, Navy play-by-play voice, Pete Medhurst. Welcome back to the show, my friend. How are you?
Dave, good to be with you. How are you?
Doing great. A lot better than we were last year. the summertime talking and previewing each other as far as ECU and Navy. It's a lot better things. I know that there's a new variant. I know numbers are going up. But let's keep our fingers crossed that people that are not vaccinated will get vaccinated, because it's become a pandemic of those that are not vaccinated. Some people are getting it. But anyway, I'm in the healthcare industry, and hopefully – in my day job, hopefully we'll see this go behind, because I can tell you that someone like program like East Carolina cannot have another 2020 and survive. So
I don't think any program really can have that. I mean, look, last year we had teams that were basically playing glorified spring football in the fall. And we had some programs like UMass and New Mexico State. Those teams had no business suiting up whatsoever. I mean, they're going out and losing 60-7 to people. New Mexico State gets crushed by Tarleton State. I mean, those teams shouldn't have even been on the field last year. Only went out there for the check because they knew they weren't going to make as much money as they normally do. So, last year was just bad in a lot of ways. Hopefully for the kids' sake, because I think sometimes we forget about all they went through last year just to play the games they did. Let's hope that they can get through the season here as uneventful as possible coming up here in 2021.
No doubt about it. One of the things that drove me crazy, that one of the things that Pirate fans talk about with ECU, was the fact that Holton Ahlers has a false positive, and the league would not reverse that, even though he had two that he went to Vidant Medical Centers, the local medical center in Greenville, tested twice during the week, and they wouldn't reverse it. Obviously, Navy was that was a good game. And obviously, you guys, it's always one of our favorite matchups because of the Naval Academy, what that means to America. You know, we always mention that to you, how much it means to play the Naval Academy, and not to have your starting quarterback was just a real shame, especially when the Pirates are starting to play better. Mason Garcia got the start that day, but as much as he knew at that point, he's a lot better now as far as knowing the program and knowing the playbook, so to speak. But certainly, I know that was one of those games you wish you could have back. But I know Navy seems to have East Carolina's number year in, year out.
Yeah, but the number was a lot closer this year. You know, there's no chance we were putting up 76 or 66 on the Pirates as we have in the past. And I told you guys this when we talked all the way back when Mike got hired. You know, he was going to get things better there. It would probably take him some time, because in our league it's so tough right now that when you're trying to dig out of a hole, it's a tough thing to do. I don't care how big the transfer portal is and how good it is for you. It takes time because of the quality of our league. But you've seen the building blocks each and every year. You know, I talked to Jimmy Moreland, one of his former players, earlier this week, and you know, he talked about you know, the quality that Mike had when Jimmy played for him at James Madison. Jimmy, of course, playing in the NFL now, and you know, that resonates with players. And if, you know, Mike just needed to get those kids to believe in what they were doing. And that's always the hardest part for new staff, is establishing credibility. But I think any of us that knew football, especially those of us that watched FCS football, you know, regularly, you knew what Mike was bringing to the table. You knew the success that a program like East Carolina has had in the past, so they know it can be done. And right now you got a great leader at the top of the program that's starting to put them in the right direction. And you've seen it over the last couple of years here as things have grown exponentially under Mike's leadership.
No doubt about it. And you look at the weight room, Pete, Big John Williams, a Greenville native. He went to Rose High School, the strength and conditioning coach. Those guys, you know, Big John, obviously, you hear the name Big John, you know he's going to be demanding. He's not going to be giving you milk and cookies when you hear Big John. But the weight room, those guys look like – I'm finally starting to see this year, Pete. When you call the game, you're going to notice there in Annapolis on November 20th, you're going to see the guys start to look like American players. They deserve to be on in the conference this year as far as playing in the American versus before. Some of them were not, you know, maybe the ones, so to speak, were American players, and then the second, third string, not so much. So we're looking at now where we have a situation where finally, as I was telling you in the green room at our pre-show, finally Coach Houston, you can kind of tell without him saying it, he's not one to be bragging, a braggart, as you know, but he's letting the media know this is finally things are starting to look better. I remember two things I remember about Coach Houston, Pete. First, the thing I noticed is he said, you know, guys, when we came in here, we had to teach the guys how to practice. I mean, that's how embarrassing things had gotten, that you have to teach a kid how to practice because things were so soft. It was more like an NFL practice. I know you're more in a NFL metro when you have the Washington football team in your neck of the woods, so to speak. And obviously my favorite team, by the way. But anyway, when you have more of a pro practice like we had back then, it was really embarrassing. The other thing that came to mind, speaking of the weight room, they've spent a lot of money upgrading the weight room. It used to look really nice, and they've worked really hard on getting that to look more like it should in the year 2021. The other thing I remember, they gave us a walkthrough of the facilities, and I'm glad that you didn't see how bad things were there. I was really embarrassed as someone that's an alum, someone that's been following East Carolina football since 1986. I mean, they had, like, when you walk through the area, like for the locker room, right before the locker room, they were down that hallway. It was like institution gray. I mean, you know, like just, it was nothing fancy about the facilities. And Coach Houston, right down to the carpet, right down to graphics on the wall, a lot of stuff they've done. Even though we don't have the Texas kind of money, and who does for athletic program and budget, they've done a nice job of taking what they have and just in the short period of time, even stuff like that, making the facilities look better. I mean, it was not pretty I'm being real with you. I'm glad that they have taken strides and steps to get things in the right direction.
Yeah, I mean, there's a certain cost to do business now, and don't think for one minute that the American and the schools in it, because if you look at the schools in it, I mean, these schools have enjoyed success in a number of different sports. The American belongs in that power, quote, conference conversation. The schools play at the highest level in a lot of different sports. As you know, East Carolina, top contender in baseball each and every year, contender to go to Omaha with the quality of the program that they have there. And I think right now, when you look at the cost to do business in college football, you've either got to figure out, are you in or are you out? And that's a harsh reality for a lot of programs. And, you know, I think especially with the way things went last year, and I think as we look to project forward, I think the American has a chance to kind of cling to these Power Five teams that, you know, as they're phrased now. I don't know if a lot of the other mid-major programs or the, quote, group of five have that chance to do that. I really don't. You brought up a great point about, you know, kids in the weight room. I mean, look, there's a certain – you look at all the transfers that are coming into the league now that are coming from, you know, power conferences. You you got to be able to compete strength and speed wise. I mean, we just did a great remake in Annapolis with our Terwilliger Center, you know, to help our student athletes as well, because, you know, we committed to being in the league, to competing in the league. So, you know, we've had to do the same thing in Annapolis to try and give our student athletes the same opportunity to compete with everybody, because let's face it, I mean, week in and week out, as we've seen, I mean, Tulane got serious and hired Willie Fritz, changed their program, you know, changed their program. East Carolina went and got Mike Houston, changed their program. You got a guy like Luke Fickell at Cincinnati, changed their program. We hung 50 on him the first time we played him. We didn't hang 50 on him the next time we played him, because you knew he was going to get things changed around there at Cincinnati. So you see schools, you know, even with UCF, I mean, hiring Gus. So, I mean, nobody's fooling around, or certainly at the top of the league, nobody's fooling around. But, I mean, you look top to bottom right now, and, you know, I know Jeff's eventually going to get South Florida back into the conversation. There is no soft spot in this league on a week-in and week-out basis, and that's when you know that you've developed a pretty good football conference. But there's a cost to competing at that level, and some schools have had to really say, are we in or are we out? And I believe these schools in the American, for the most part, are committed to being in.
No question about it. While we were talking about facilities, I promised folks we're going to talk about football with Pete, but I am a facilities nerd. How good are the facilities there at the Naval Academy? I haven't had the chance, and hoping that I can make the trek and meet you in person finally on November 20th. I know that's kind of a tough time for folks. It's kind of right there before, I believe, Thanksgiving. I think it's the week before Thanksgiving. My memory serves me right off the top of my head. But you guys, I've heard about how beautiful Annapolis is. I've heard about how great the Naval Academy is. But as far as the football facilities, talk about the upgrades you were just talking about. Talk about that and maybe some things on the wish list for Coach Ken.
Yeah, I mean, if you go look at our website at NavySports.com, you can see all about the Terwilliger Center that they just put together. You know, expands meeting rooms, obviously opportunities for greater film watching as a team, weight rooms, spectacular. Our home stadium, obviously the Navy Marine Corps, a lot of East Carolina fans travel when they come up here. So they know the quality of the facility, our practice fields. We've got, you know, grass and turf facilities available for our players, depending on what we're playing on. So we've got what you're looking for. I mean, you know, you can't find a better picturesque practice field. I mean, you're practicing next to, you know, multi-million dollar yachts and everything rolling into the city dock in Annapolis right on the Severn River. So that helps considerably when it's hot out there. You're hoping you get some of that breeze off the Severn River and the Chesapeake Bay for the players, just when they can just get a whiff of that breeze coming through there to cool them off maybe a degree or two during camp in August. But, you know, we're blessed. We've got tremendous support. Our fan base has been incredibly generous, very supportive during the pandemic in the 2020 season. We had people from a season ticket perspective that essentially donated their money for the 2020 season, you know, for those that weren't going to attend because of the pandemic. Because let's face it, on Saturdays for us, we've got people that come in from all over the country for these games. That's the beauty of our program. But we've had tremendous support. They've been incredibly good to us, and hopefully these types of additions from a facility standpoint allow our student athletes to continue to grow and obviously allow us to try and compete as part of the physical mission at the Naval Academy.
And one of the things that's important to me, I always tell my kids who are getting ready to be a third grader and a second grader, education is paramount. The education, if my son had a chance to play sports there at the Naval Academy, I would be like, as much as I wanted to play at ECU, that's a huge honor. That's a real huge honor. And talk about that. The education piece of things is really, really, I mean, you think about it, you get a great education, you get to play a sport that you love, and you get to serve your country. I mean, what better way? I get goosebumps just thinking about
on the highest level. All of our teams compete on the highest level. And, you know, we have 33 varsity sports. I mean, we're like the third or fourth biggest program in the country. I mean, I think Stanford, Ohio State, I think off the top of my head, are the only ones that have more, you know, intercollegiate athletic programs than we do at the Naval Academy. But that's also, you know, as I mentioned, the physical mission is such a big deal. I mean, the academy and the things that it's founded on, the moral, mental, and the physical development of student athletes and our midshipmen, and we give our student athletes an opportunity to play at the highest level. And let's face it, I mean, when you graduate from the Naval Academy, you're stepping into many arenas with a reasonably decent salary to start out, usually much higher than a lot of other college students in a lot of other areas. And you have an opportunity to make it a career if you choose to do so. And even after 5 years, you know, if you choose to go back into civilian life, you know, having Naval Academy on your resume pretty much puts your resume at the top of every pile, you know, when you send it in. So those are the great things that it can do for you. It teaches you life discipline. And, you know, even though, you know, I didn't attend the Naval Academy, but, you know, working there as a civilian since 1998.
Wow.
You know, you go about ways in your life being around it an awful lot. You know, I mean, I still, you know, I just turned 51 this year, and I still, you know, I talk to people, yes, sir, no, sir, respectful of the way those kids carry themselves all the time. And, you know, I talk to people in our industry all the time. They ask me about the athletes. And, you know, I think if you go back and look at the conversations that we have, the quality of the conversations I've had with many of our student athletes and in interviews and even non-interview settings. I mean, last year during the summer, you know, I'm narrating a board where a lot of our football players are having a discussion with members of law enforcement when we were having a really tough time in our communities with relationships between some members of law enforcement. It's not all of them. We have incredible amounts of law enforcement officers each and every day who do this job and do it at a miraculously high level. They do things that we would never, you know, likely do ourselves, risking their lives every day to keep us safe. But our kids were having frank discussions with members of law enforcement about how to make those relationships better, in particular in African-American communities. And our kids were willing to take that conversation head on and have those conversations, you know, with people of authority at that point. And it just, again, it gave me, as I talk about how extraordinary our kids are, I try to also remind people they are college students, just like everybody else. They're not, you know, we don't get cyborg students from different high schools. We're recruiting the same schools that everybody else is. It's just these young men and women are extraordinary people in making that commitment to go through the rigors of getting a terrific education, and B, willing to serve their country for a minimum of 5 years, you know, after attending the Naval Academy.
Great. Certainly you paint that picture so well of how great the Naval Academy is. And one of my favorite games of the year. I'm glad that you guys are in the American for sure. It's a great, I think it's not necessarily, I wouldn't say a rivalry, but I think that's one of the things that, to me personally, if you pull for a school or if it's your, you know, my case, that's my school, then certainly, you know, it doesn't matter who you're playing. You should obviously get up for every single game. I mean, when you think about football, as much as we love it, there's only 12 games a year in the regular season. You know, it's not like 52 games a year, like every single Saturday there's a game. So it should be mean something. And I think that's one of the things in American that we can all work on, is creating more rivalries. I think the UCF situation now, Cincinnati being very good. You know, you're talking about Tulane. There's a lot of great. Memphis is very good. It seems like year in, year out now, pretty much every single school right now is good, as you were talking about. With the Naval Academy, I want to shift gears with you. I know that was a tough year, 3-7, but like I was telling you, if history repeats itself, whenever Navy has a tough year, they do very well in the next year. But I know you were telling me in the green room, there's more questions on offense that may, who knows what's going to happen in the season. But I'm hoping for you guys, if history repeats itself, then it'll be a great year for you guys. You can bounce back a lot quicker than having a few years, you know, that are average or below average, which is unacceptable, I know, with Navy.
Well, I mean, I think it's unacceptable with any program, but, you know, I look at it this way. I mean, you know, Kendi Mautalolo's track record speaks for itself. And, you know, usually if we have a down year, we don't stay down for long. Back-to-back losing seasons just haven't happened, you know, during his tenure. Even when you go back to Paul Johnson starting the triple option in year two, we were terrific. And he started that thing rolling. So, yeah, I mean, look, I defensively, I mean, we got a lot of proven commodities back. I mean, you know, we've arguably got one of the best defenders in the league back in Diego Figueroa, middle linebacker, on the Bednarik Award list, and a young man that's got a chance to challenge for a lot of national honors this year at that position. He's a real, really good football player. But, you know, I thought Brian did a great job with the defense. And when we came back from that month-long COVID break in November, that defense was fantastic for the rest of the season. I mean, they really played at a high level, and a lot of those kids are back. So I think they are confident that they can hit the ground running. You know, great kid like Kevin Brennan, you know, anchoring things back in the secondary as well. So I think there's a lot to be excited about on the defensive side. And look, let's face it, with us, I mean, we didn't run the football last year. And if we don't run the football, we're not going to be successful. I mean, that's what our bread and butter is. And, you know, I'm sure Coach Niumatalolo, Ivan Jasper, and all the offensive coaches, you know, they've studied it ad nauseum, you know, why the running game did not work last year. And statistically, all you have to do is look at the production of the quarterback position. We just got to have to do a better job there. Xavier Arline is an exciting sophomore at that position who's going to have, you know, he had spring, you know, to get some work in. Ty Levitai is another young man that is really – come on and is also a young player that's ready to challenge for that position. I think that job is open right now for either one of those two to take on headed into the season. You know, fullback for us is going to be, you know, I mean, we've got some unproven commodities. We've got some guys we really like. I mean, you don't recruit players on your team if you don't think they can play for you, but, you know, hasn't been a whole lot there. I mean, Isaac Ruas has probably had the most carries of anybody in game situations, but again, handling the full load, you know, this will be his first opportunity to really win that job going into camp. A-backs, you know, I think our slot backs will be fine. We've got some proven commodities there. And Pierce Banbury anchoring things at center on the offensive line. But, you know, again, you're going to have some guys that have not had a ton of game snaps, but I know they're very excited about the way the kids on the offensive line have really competed. We've seen some kids jockey around the depth chart throughout spring football. That tells you that guys are coming to work every day, ready to compete. And I know they're excited about some of the talent on the offensive line. But again, until we see it September 4th against Marshall, for the first time in a while, we really don't know what this offense is going to look like. It's one of the few times where going into a season, I've had absolutely no feel, you know, because we've just got so much unproven, you know, ability out there. And last year really didn't do anything for the kids, you know, trying to play under those circumstances last year. Having a full spring practice now and a full camp, which will be a regular camp as opposed to last year where there wasn't any contact, I would expect this team to have a completely different mindset and level of execution headed into the opener against Marshall.
And speaking of which, I was just going to say, if you're Marshall, you should be very worried. I love what you're downplaying. I know you're being honest. I'm joking with you. But I tell you what, Marshall is your opener, and we have them on the road there in Huntington for game three, as we were talking pre-show. I tell you what, that team started out lightning. They look like they had a chance to play certainly a New Year's Six Bowl, 7-0. They look like they were going to be the representative, if you will, for the group of five. And then I don't know. I mean, maybe you know because you're closer to the area than I am, but I don't know what happened. I mean, I really thought, wow, this is a team that can – it's probably going to come down to Marshall or Cincinnati in that game. But do you know what happened in that situation before we even talk about the coaching change? I mean, what happened those last handful of games? They lost ever out, right? I mean,
yeah, they were terrific defensively, young quarterback. Offensively, they kind of got a little rank at the end of the season. Didn't execute, you know, at a high level. That defense is legit though, and if you're, I mean, if you're, they were unbelievable against the run last season. And certainly, you know, again, new staff coming in, Charles Huff, running backs coach at Alabama, takes over for Doc Holliday. Certainly an interesting move there. Not that Coach Huff, got nothing to do with Coach Huff, but just the fact that they, released Doc Holliday the way they did. So, but, you know, for a guy like Coach Huff, I mean, here's a great opportunity. You're taking over a team that's ready-made to win, obviously playing, within Nick Saban's system. You pick up some things that might help you as a head coach, coaching with the best staff in America. So I think the Marshall folks have to be incredibly excited with everything that returns for that team. Bringing in someone that has the pedigree of a Charles Huff, they're ready to hit the ground running headed into this season. And, you know, we're going to find out that first game because we've got some questions. Their biggest question is going to be how do they adapt to the new staff? It's going to be a heck of a ball game in Annapolis, I know, to start the season. But, you know, we play Marshall and Air Force right out of the gate, and we play Notre Dame. So our non-conference schedule is tough. Your non-conference schedule has got some humdingers on it. I mean, with App State right out of the gate in South Carolina. So, I mean, that's what playing these games is all about. If you're going to recruit the best talent, the best talent wants to play the best talent. They're trying to put film down, especially for NFL teams. You know, they want to see you playing good football teams. And if you come play in the American, you're going to get plenty of film. That's for sure, for the NFL scouts to break down.
No question about it. And, you know, when you were talking about the only way that we're, you know, to quote the great poet Ric Flair, to be the man, you got to be the man.
The best in America, baby. The best in America. Okay.
I'm a big wrestling fan. So anyway, to be the best, to be the man, you got to beat the man. And for us, that's the way that you do it. I want to ask you about a couple things. You were talking about Nick Saban. Today, one of the things that's concerned me, I obviously, with the name, image, and likeness, I'm not happy about the way they implemented things. But today, when Saban says Alabama quarterback Bryce Young to make seven figures, that concerns me. That concerns me. My situation, I felt like that I have no problems with the name, image, and likeness for guys to make money. I just felt like it should be get the college degree. Then we have like a annuity or we have some kind of fund, you know, savings thing where then you can touch the money. But I'm worried about the we already have problems in college football and college sports. And I had a problem with guys saying that they were NCAA, like the basketball tournament, when they said that they were NCAA property. yeah. You know, I had I agree with them to a certain extent, but I thought they went a little too far with that. And I also believe there's a lot of guys that'll never make the NFL. They'll never make the NBA. They'll never make MLB. We all know that because how difficult. And so basically what you're doing now is the guys that will never make the NFL or MLB or NBA, the pro leagues, if you will, they're creating another pro league because those guys would never make it. Tim Tebow, for a perfect example of a guy that I would think about all the money he would have made with Urban Meyer rolling down there in Gainesville in Florida, he would be a millionaire potentially. And I know you could go back, but I just have a problem with that. I don't have a problem with name, image, and likeness. I just have a problem of – I don't know what the – going back to beating up on NCAA, I don't think there's really any parameters on certain things we've heard about, but there's still a lot of question marks for name, image, and likeness for me.
I think the key thing here is the schools are not paying the athletes because they were going to be – if that was the case, you'd have – 25 of the 130, or it's 129 Division I schools that play football would have to choose something else. They'd have to drop down to FCS, Division II, because they wouldn't be able to support it. What has come out of this, and it's just like in pro sports, the stars are going to make money. The 85th guy's not going to make money. I mean, I've seen – parents of, shall we say, Olympic sport athletes, I'll use that term as we like to use it in college sports, saying, hey, Jenny or Joey is now eligible for NIL. What does that mean? You know, usually you have to provide a service right. of some kind. Just because, I mean, I've seen athletes in lesser conferences saying online, hey, I'm eligible for name, image, and likeness now. If anybody in this community would like to, you know, would like to have me, you know, support your business, you know, hey, it's not going to happen at that level right. for those players. You know, the Bryce Youngs, the DJ Ungalele's, you know, past years, the Trevor Lawrence's, you know, I think of all the guys Ohio State's had over the last years, all the guys Alabama, Clemson, that they've had through the years. I mean, how much money is Travis Etienne and all those great defensive linemen that they've had over the last few years? You know, I don't, you know, people are like, well, maybe this will help them stay in college. Football guys were already sticking around 3 years because that's, you know, that's what the NFL tells you to do. Basketball is a completely different animal. I would just like to see those players. And look, I mean, we've got the G League, got Kevin Durant's league that's starting up, the overtime league that's going to pay guys $100,000 to play there. I would much rather see something like that.
Yes.
Because if you got a guy that plays at the top level already, that's already got that kind of ability, that's only going to stick there for one. Those guys are going basically for one semester.
Exactly.
The moment the season is over, as soon as they're out of the NCAA tournament, they're on to wherever they're training for the NBA draft coming up. So, you know, does that open up scholarships maybe for a couple of other kids somewhere along the way? Look, I hope it does encourage kids to stay in college longer. You know, I hope it encourages more of them to potentially get a degree, because a debilitating injury at some point,
right.
you need that. Somewhere along the way. I mean, I don't mind. I like the idea of kids being able to give clinics and stuff like that. Yeah. If they want to go down to a Boys and Girls Club or even the car dealership down the street for an hour, sign some autographs. But it seems really unnerving when we see the college quarterback on the verge of making seven figures. And remember, the NCAA, people get this often confused. They think the NCAA is some, you know, separate organization. The NCAA is the membership of all the schools themselves. We've supposedly got some of the smartest people on the planet as chancellors and school presidents. And we put people in charge that have proven an inability to do this successfully.
Right.
And that's what I don't understand. Look, don't fault Mark Emmert for taking the paycheck. If there, it's just like Roger Goodell, Rob Manfred, all these other people. Don't fault them for taking the paycheck, but fault the people that still keep them in charge. I have to believe that there is someone right now that is better at organizing people and bringing people together and putting together a plan for college athletics better than Mark Emmert out there. We knew this was coming, and yet they looked incredibly disorganized, basically then begging Congress to step in and make the rules for them. And unfortunately, you know, we've seen some states do it individually, and that forced the NCAA's hand, because then you'd really have some chaos in court. And the NCAA's, you know, record in court lately is not bowl eligible. So, you know – I just think we need to find leadership, and the places that have the best leadership, no matter what industry it is, whether it's business, college athletics, whatever, the people that has the best leadership usually has the best business. And I think the NCAA could simply do better from a leadership standpoint right now than what Mark Emmert's provided.
Well, he's certainly another thing too, is it kind of comes to point. I was talking about this in another situation, and you know how it is with coaches. Coaches are kind of like preachers. You know, after a while, you say, okay, it's kind of time for him or her to move on. ministers. And I think the same thing with coaches. Well, I think Emmert's had his time, and it's time to move on to, you know, that would be, you had your time, you had your say. Now it's time for, as you said, new leadership. I wanted to ask you about, I told you ahead of time, pre-show, about the 12-team playoff. There was comments I heard today, I guess the ACC Media Day. I was catching that as I was driving home from my day job. Dabo Swinney say there's not 12 teams good enough to be in the playoff. Mac Brown has come out. There's some players. And I had a real problem with that because I told you ahead of time, I'm a huge college football fan, sports fan in general, and we were talking about business. If you were smart, wouldn't you give the customers what they want? And I was thinking about this earlier. My son's in a tournament next week for 8 and under. Americans love tournaments. I looked at the bracket today. I was so excited. I have no clue about these other teams, but I was just excited to see an 8 and under local, well, it's actually a state tournament for All-Stars. Mm-hmm. And to see that tournament bracket finally came out today and who's playing what and what time and all that. But Americans love tournaments and like legitimate tournaments, not the made-for-TV event. We call it the college football playoff now for ESPN. And ABC, I guess. But what do you think? Do you like the 12-team tournament, the playoff, if you will?
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, my daughter plays travel softball. She just finished up her final year at 12 and under. So I know exactly what you're talking about with the tournament excitement. I think it's incumbent now upon the other schools to put up or shut up. You wanted a bigger tournament. You wanted to get into the tournament. Well, now that you're going to get access to it, when that happens, you got to put up or shut up. We've had problems filling a 4-team tournament on a competitive balance basis. We've had blowouts in a 4-team tournament. So while game – and here's the example I cite. Last year, it was easy to rank Coastal Carolina number 12 in the final bowl subcommittee poll, whatever they were doing. Now, with a real tournament on the line, do you think they're going to put Coastal Carolina, App State, Louisiana at 12? You know, when Cincinnati's already in the top 12 at number 8, do you think they're going to put a second G5 team in there at number 12? I think that's going to generate, you know, some interesting conversation. You know, when it gets to that point. So yes, the first week, 5 versus 12 or 6 versus 11, 8 versus 9, those games may be competitive. But when it's time to tangle with the three big amigos there, Alabama, Clemson, and Ohio State, are those teams going to be ready to dance on the same dance floor with them? Several teams have proven so far that they can't. And it's up to those teams now to prove that they belong in this 12-team bracket that eventually they're going to come up with. Don't penalize the three teams that have taken their football program into a different stratosphere right now. It's incumbent upon the other 126 to prove that they're ready to compete at that level. And ultimately, that will tell us whether we want 12 teams each and every year. We know the money's going to be great. ESPN and ABC are going to be, hey, they're going to run Brinks trucks up there full of money to continue to televise this thing. But it's now incumbent upon our league, especially. Okay. We're likely going to have a chance to dance on that dance floor now. So when we get there, you know, we can't pee down our leg. We've got to be ready to compete with those teams on a year in and year out basis and prove that their expansion and including us in that expansion are worth what they did for teams like this now going forward. That's all. I mean, I'm happy to watch it because, I mean, I'm gonna watch college football, whether it's North Dakota State, Union, right, Salisbury, whatever. I'm watching it. But it's now incumbent upon and our league is going to be one of the big beneficiaries. Don't think for 1 minute this doesn't help us, but it makes our whole league, all 11 teams now, have to look at themselves in the mirror and say, hey, how do we look like that? And we're close. You know, on a one-game basis, we've been good enough. But the question is, each year when this tournament now starts, can we get out of the first round? Because as soon as we don't get out of the first round, people are going to be like, oh, see, the American can't play with the Power Five teams. So it's going to be incumbent upon school presidents, ADs, and everybody in our league to get the product consistently there. And I think based on, again, most recent hires in the league, most schools seem to be willing to do that.
There's two things that come to mind when I heard about this afternoon. I want to get your take because you're a sportscaster all the time. Is the reason why the ACC does not want this. I'll tell you why. Because you have Clemson, and they've had times when their league was down. I don't know about this year. I haven't had a chance. I'm working on that right now as we get ready for the college. This is my time to prep. I know you're like prepping year round. It's amazing what you guys do. I have the utmost respect for play-by-play guys, but when Dabo's, there's twofold here. There's two things to this ACC thing, two-prong thing. The Clemson thing is Clemson doesn't want that maybe 1 in 100 chance that a Cincinnati beats Clemson in the national championship. I know that's probably far-fetched, but there's always a chance if you're on the field that Cincinnati may have this. Let's say Cincinnati, throw in there Navy, whoever, that has this underdog chance. And the one day that the one game where Clemson's not on their mark, then, you know, the underdog wins, which is great for the sport. It's not great for Clemson. The other thing is you look at NC State right now. You look at North Carolina. Matt Grant Brown is awesome. Dave Durham is an awesome coach. They've done a great job recruiting. I'm not saying that. But having a East Carolina being able to be at the dance party, you know, you're talking about be at the table, so to speak, they can't say anymore. Well, when they're competing against the same guys, right now they can say, if you go to East Carolina, you'll never have a chance to play for a national championship or the big bowls, all that kind of stuff, or even what we're talking about with name, image, likeness stuff. But those are the schools that are going to be really fighting hard against us because talking about the American, the Cincinnati's, the Navy's, the East Carolina's, the UCF's, because they're afraid that we can surpass them because a lot of those teams are more basketball schools and more of a basketball league. If you take away, I mean, I know you have, hopefully it'll be better for them, but I think our league is very underrated. And I'm not saying that because you're on, because we're in the American, being East Carolina, we cover that. I think our league, there's a up top to bottom, week in, week out, there, our league is vastly underrated, is very improved and compared like you were talking about. And I think the ACC is worried that they're going to kind of be like the Pac-12. The Pac-12 has had some down years. They haven't really had much success in this playoff. And they're, the ACC doesn't want to get left behind or be like, you know, hey, just a basketball league. They knew they had to be a football league because football stirs the drink.
I think Clemson has certainly, I mean, if you ask Brad Brownell, he would tell you first that Clemson's a football school right now. Now, the rest of the league, you know, yeah, I mean, a lot of those football programs are still fighting pretty good basketball programs. Virginia Tech and Virginia at times have seen some success, but there are some other programs got a long way to go. Here's the thing. I mean, look, everybody's only got 85 scholarships. The transfer portal now allows you to leave just like that. It's changed the game completely. You know, look at how many kids come from Power Five programs into our league. We're seeing a ton of that right now. Dabo never has to worry about, I think, as long as he's there in particular, he doesn't ever have to worry about Clemson taking a dip. What he's done is he's challenged the rest of the ACC to come up to his level. But I think what, you know, when you bring more teams in, there's more chances to have that pothole. You know, you've only got to win two games right now to win this thing.
Exactly.
Now you have to win more. It's going to put more kids out there. There's opportunity maybe to get, you know, injuries and, you know, goofy things happen that takes kids off the field right now. So, yes, from that standpoint, I think I understand where Dabo's coming from, because he, Nick, and Ryan Day, obviously Urban Meyer before him, they built their programs and said, hey, y'all got to get up to here with us. Lincoln Riley, to a certain extent, following Bob Oklahoma, they existed to be in that conversation. But essentially, I think Dad was saying, why penalize us for elevating our programs to here, and everybody else is just content to have programs that are right here. I mean, because you know as well as I do, there are some programs, if you win six games, you go to a bowl game, everybody's, yeah, that's great, all right. And then there are a few programs that choose to do business at this level. So I look in our league. You know, you mentioned, I look at our league, and I'm telling you, Houston right now, playing basketball under Kelvin Sampson at an incredibly high level. Memphis, always been a basketball school there. Football has had to fight that battle for years, and they've got Penny Hardaway coaching basketball there now from that standpoint. So, I mean, you're talking, you know, Temple, always been a basketball school for the most part. So, you know, Cincinnati's always had a great product. I think that the Florida schools have a chance to be football dominant. But, you know, again, as I said earlier, it's incumbent upon us now that we're getting going to likely get a seat or have a chance to get a seat at the table. I mean, we can't go 8-4 and think we're going to make it.
Right.
But, you know, our top team every year in this league going to have a chance to dance at that table. They've got to be competitive. Can't get blown out, or we're all going to look like fools for, you know, Central Florida proclaiming national championships. And, you know, the year Tom Herman had, you know, Greg Ward and those guys, and they beat Florida State, beat Oklahoma in the regular season. So, you know, are we going to compete at that level? Or when we get there, are we going to go, ooh, that's the shadow of Ohio State. You know, look out. So it's incumbent upon those 126 teams, 125 teams to try and rise to the occasion here.
No question. Hey, I think that very thing. We all know that with our business that, you know, we're about competition and wins and losses. And you were talking about the guys earlier. You're talking about guys, they want to play these big games. If you're a competitor, sure, you don't want to play a cupcake. And so I believe another thing that drives me crazy, we'll move on, but it drives me crazy when I hear about that this is going to hurt the regular season. We've heard that. To me, I tell you what, if you know right now, if it's Navy and East Carolina and we're fighting because I believe our programs, we're headed up with you guys to climb the next level. What if it's November 20th, hypothetically, right? And it's the regular season. And we know that we have to beat Navy or that we have no chance to be in the college football playoff or to win a championship like I believe we're in the next year or two we're going to be competing for, which before would be a pipe dream. In previous years, it would be like, oh, yeah, good luck with that. But now, if you look at Navy, East Carolina, November 20th, and those two teams are fighting for AAC championship, which means we have a chance to be at that table, you don't think those games are going to matter? I think they're going to matter more. I really do. And that may be what I was talking about earlier with the rivalries. All of a sudden, Navy knocks us off, or East Carolina knocks off Navy, and you go, those son of a guns knocked us out last year. We got something for them next year. I mean, I think this is going to be a great thing for our conference and our sport. I really do.
Well, a rivalry is a rivalry because both teams win. You know, it's not a rivalry when one team wins all the games. Like, you know, when we beat Army 14 times in a row or whatever that streak got to. You know, I mean, when teams win constantly, if the teams that – I mean, look at our league lately. I mean, our league lately has been Central Florida, Memphis – Houston, us, you know, Cincinnati now has under Luke has come back into that conversation. You know, we've had kind of the same teams battling. You know, Sonny's had, you know, SMU kind of knocking on the door right, you know, right there. They get to that one game though, and it, you know, just it backfires. I mean, Philip Montgomery's had a couple of terrific opportunities with Tulsa, you know, elevating their program at times. And I think Tulsa's one of the toughest Division I jobs in America. And Coach Montgomery's done a heck of a job there. You know, and even though they lose, you know, Zaven Collins, you watch, Tulsa's going to be decent. They're going to be a tough foe again this year. Like I said, Tulane went out and hired Willie, changed their fortunes from a football perspective. So I think we're looking – I think the league has placed itself and taken – you know, almost every program is taking the product seriously. And that's all you can – that's all you can do. But the teams that have been constant in this league, you know, they're the ones winning all the time right now. It's always Central Florida, Memphis, you know, Houston, Cincinnati got into there. You know, obviously we've played in a title game. Temple played in a title game under Matt Rhule. But for the most part, you've had the same clubs knocking heads. So Central Florida, Memphis, right now, probably the best rivalry in our league because they play the most unbelievable games we've seen in American football. And Cincinnati, under Luke, has now entered into that conversation with those two teams as well and deserves to be mentioned there.
I know you're not a prognosticator, but before we let you go, do you have a feel on – I know you said there's a lot of question marks. Do you think this is a bowl team for Navy at least? Because I feel like you guys have a real shot at it. I know it's a tough non-conference schedule. That's going to be tough. We know how we've been talking about in length about how tough the American is. But I just feel like you guys – I really feel at the very least you would be 6-6, I would think.
Well, the margin for error for us every year is razor thin. I mean – you know, that's you go back and look at the years, even when we're really good, we're winning a lot of close games. So that's the, you know, that's the critical thing for us. We just got to figure out how to execute, you know, in close games. And obviously the quarterback is going to be critical. I think we're going to have a defense that's going to be able to play with a lot of people. So if we can get the quarterback execution that we're used to, you know, even remotely close to it. I mean, let's face it, players like Keenan Reynolds and Malcolm Perry spoil you. But if, you know, Arline or Levitai, even Masai Maynard down on the depth chart there, if any one of those three guys can really grab the position and play it well and execute it well, you know, we're going to have a chance because I think our defense is going to give us a chance to win each and every week. So from a general broad standpoint, do I think we can be a bowl team? Sure. But as I said, our three out-of-conference games are incredibly tough, and our league is great. So you can be a good football team. You can be sitting at 5-7 at the end of this thing and look at yourself and go, man, we really played decent football here, but because of the quality of our league, it just wasn't good enough. So I think certainly the potential is there just from a general, you know, broad standpoint. I certainly think we have the ability – because I think anybody that plays defense in this league has a leg up because, you know, there haven't been many great defensive teams through the years outside of, you know, it took Luke a year to get Cincinnati reorganized defensively. Temple's had a couple – Temple under Matt was terrific on the defensive side. He got a lot of guys off that team that are sitting in the NFL right now. Willie at Tulane, I mean, they've had – they've almost become like, you know, defensive lineman U with some of the way these guys have played on the defensive line. So, look, I mean, our league is terrific, and we're gonna have to go compete on a week in and week out basis.
Well, it's gonna be fantastic. Before we let you go, how can people follow your work? We appreciate all that you do, not only for Navy, but coming on the show means a lot, and I enjoy picking your brain about sports in general. I think you must stay up all night long. Your knowledge is a lot there for every single sport. It seems like.
Well, we got a lot of resources out there to help you learn all that stuff. Obviously, Joe Miller, who does the games with me at Navy, he and I do our college football podcast, It's College Football, and I host each and every day on the Team 980 in D.C. from 3 to 7 in the afternoon. And folks can follow me on Twitter, at Pete Medhurst. We keep it simple for them, and we are Twitter-friendly. We interact with people. You know, we're not afraid to talk college football online and things of that nature. So always willing to interact with the fans. And obviously we love coming to your place. You know, we've missed it over the last couple of years, missed coming down there last year simply because it's one of the best press boxes in America when it comes to press box food, man. That was the one sad part about not traveling for the road games last year, was missing out on some of that great press box grub down there in Greenville.
No doubt about it. A lot of barbecue and places, but thank you so much for coming on. We appreciate you so much. And, good luck to the midshipmen and Navy, and I hope I can make that trek, and maybe Bubba. Bubba has been there, I think, twice, at least once, but he and his dad, Gary, brag about Annapolis. I've heard so many Pirate fans over the years tell me how great Navy is, and
great city.
Hopefully we can definitely see it. So good luck again. Thank you so much, and we'll have you back on certainly before that game, definitely.
Dave, always a pleasure to be with you guys. Appreciate it.
Take care, buddy. Have a good night. All right, bye-bye. Appreciate Pete being with us. Another great night here on the Sports Objective. And we're going to have Jay Sunhalter momentarily. We're getting up with him right now. Appreciate Bubba working really hard, by the way, if you're just joining us. He's actually doing PA for the Copperheads there in the Charlotte area. and doing the producing at the same time. I appreciate all the stuff he does behind the scenes. Speaking of which, I had a chance earlier today. We're going to release that later on, not tonight, but I want to make sure he worked hard on getting the interview with ECU running backs coach Chris Foster. And the running backs room, as we've been talking about, is going to be stout. A lot of positions this year are stout under third-year head coach Mike Houston. And certainly we're very excited about hearing that interview, and we'll have that for you. We won't have that tonight, but we definitely will release that on our YouTube channel, certainly, and we'll have that where you can hear that very soon. Want to remind you also, great programming coming up. We're going to be talking tomorrow, as a matter of fact, with head coach of ECU basketball. I told you it was coming up. We can confirm that now with Coach Joe Dooley. We'll be talking to him year four, and I know there was a lot of problems with COVID-19. It really hurt the basketball program. Started out very strong, and I think it was 20-some days without a basketball game. It was crazy with hurting the program. We'll talk about, obviously, losing Jaden Garden. But I think with a lot of when it comes to recruiting high school players and, of course, the transfers, I think we're going to be a better program this year under year four. Obviously, well, there's a coaching search as far as assistant coach, losing Coach Rock, Steve Rockerfort. That's going to be huge, but I'm sure that'll be big. So we'll be looking forward to that for sure. I also want to mention, too, that we had Donnie Kay on last week, and certainly Blake Harrell and Tim Doust as well. With us right now, though, we're going to bring in one of our favorite people in the whole wide world, and that's Jay Sunhalter. Jay, man, how are you?
I'm good. How are you doing? It's so good to talk to you guys. Sorry I'm running a little late here.
That's okay. That's okay. That's what the summertime is all about, my friend. We had Pete Medhurst, play-by-play voice of course, the Navy midshipman on to preview that matchup on November 20th as the Pirates heading up to the Naval Academy. Jay, it's so great to have you on. I tell you what, can I be your agent? Because you did a great job with the baseball team. You did basketball, baseball. But hopefully, you know, Corey Glore is gone to Tulane, unfortunately. But have you applied for that position for ECU baseball? Can we have some breaking news tonight, my friend?
Well, first of all, you were too kind. Thank you so much. It was my greatest joy to be covering the Pirates this year with Greg Pierce and his team. It was the best experience, you know, ever to be back at your alma mater and, you know, to be back and see so many great people. As far as, you know, what they're going to be doing there with baseball in the future. So I'm on the analyst side. So I'm right. Not sure who it's going to be, but I'm sure it'll be somebody good.
Well, you know, with the seriously, Jay, I think with the one of the cool things, I want to give a shout out to all our great people behind the scenes. Certainly with the videographers. I mean, you know, I love Brian Medor, great friend of the program. He's awesome. You look at the great job that our folks have done, guys that are work with us, Sutton Young, that also have helped them behind the scenes, and all the video stuff for ecupirates.com. And of course, now with ESPN Plus, I'll put our video people, and I'm not saying I sound like a homer, but I'll put our people against anybody in the country, because we put a great product out there, and that's a national broadcast, in my opinion, and a lot of local guys, a lot of local women that are working really hard behind the scenes that don't get enough credit. And then you have a guy like Jay Sunhalter, a former Pirate player with certainly with football. You're doing an excellent job. How about our good friend, our mutual friend, Patrick Johnson, a good old P-man. There's a lot of guys out there that are former players, alums of the program. That will be excellent as we expand our coverage coming up. I know with Olympic sports, ESPN Plus, you're not going to have 5,000 sports in the spring this year where they had a lot of scheduling issues. So I'm looking forward to it. Don't you think?
Yeah. I mean, there's so many talented people. I mean, when you watch the product, you can tell the time and effort everybody put into it, you know, behind the scenes and on air. But I mean, the best part of me is the people. You know, you talk about everybody you mentioned, the type of personality everybody has, the person they are, just everybody working together and people that care so much about ECU, but putting out a great product. I mean, that's the best part about it for me, especially, you know, when you're playing football at East Carolina and playing a sport down there, it's all about the team. Those are the memories, the camaraderie, all the things that you really look forward to. And it's the same thing on the broadcast side. it's a team. So even though we're covering our teams, it's a team as far as broadcasting and putting it out in the air. And that's the best part. And that's the funnest part, is having that finished product and it looking and sounding so good.
And before we move on, I want to give a shout out to Greg Pierce, all those great folks. I wanted to make sure I mention his name because he is excellent. I remember when we went to 2019 to UCLA, and we didn't have, I mean, I couldn't believe that UCLA at that time, number one baseball team in the country, and they don't even have any kind of video, you know, they have nothing. And I just couldn't believe that they, the number one team in the country. And we love Bryant Ward, a former ECU baseball player. So not knocking his program, just, you know, saying, hey, how come you guys are UCLA, the money that UCLA has, one of the best schools in the country and one of the best baseball programs right now in the country, as far as they're definitely top 25, top 15 program. I just couldn't believe that. But we wanted to have you on, obviously, because of ECU football. First of all, just want to get your take before we go into – we're in the preseason now, early on. What are your takeaways so far with the Pirates heading into the 2021 season?
Gosh, I mean, I can't wait for the season to start to see the improvements we've made. I mean, that's the biggest thing. It's like everybody's just waiting, because I really think there's going to be a big step forward. But you look at, you know, the transfers that have come in. You look at the development of the players already in the program. You think about the same system in year three. All these things are really lining up to have a big year. I think everybody's just getting ready, you know, getting ready to see it unfold. But I'll tell you, the experience that these guys have made, you know, so many freshmen that played last year, now they're going to be in their second year playing. But I don't think this can be overstated, is when you have the same offensive system, same defensive system now, you know, Blake Harrell's system year two, you know, Dyke Kirkpatrick year three, it makes it so much easier, because you're not learning something new for the first time. You're perfecting and getting it better. And that's something, when I played, was such a huge benefit when you're in year two or year three of the system. So I think that's gonna really have a huge impact on this season.
And I know Bubba wanted me to mention this, but something that came to mind as well is something that is, maybe the term is overused, but the culture that Mike Houston had, it kind of reminds us, as he and I have talked about before, this is year three, like you experienced with Coach Holtz. I mean, you're talking about a program that had gone at that point, had won, three games in 2 years, and then Coach Holtz takes over, and then year three, I mean, the Pirates became the Pirates that we knew. And this is a situation now with Coach Houston. Don't you think, you always hear about year three is the big year for coaches. I really believe when you look at the depth, you look at the coaches we have, you look at the talent we have, you look at Big John, what they've done in the weight room, Sonny, oh my goodness. I mean, they are starting to really, I said this earlier in our show with Pete Medhurst, you look at our Pirates now, watch them, look at them. The offensive line and defensive line look more like American players, more than we've ever had.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at the weight room videos, when you look at these guys that are being recruited in, you see the potential, but it's all about the development and it's showing on the field. You know, and every team in the country is working hard right now. Everybody's doing those things in the summer. But it's all about the development, you know, and the work ethic and really the want to be good and be great. And I think that the attitude of the program has changed. I think there's been an influx of young talent and older players that have a lot to prove, and experienced players. So I think it's all kind of coming together at the right time. But now, you know, now it's just going to be time to produce out on the field. But I think this team is going to have a big opportunity this year. I just think that it's going to be so important for this team to get off to a good start. And that's going to be huge this year.
No question, Jay. I tell you what, our non-conference schedule is enough. Coaches never sleep anyway, as you know. But you look at the – if you break down the schedule, you have a situation, Jay, where you have – you're starting Appalachian State on the road, Bank of America Stadium. I think that's a – and let's be honest, I think that's a right now, I don't know the latest line, but if I were fair, I would say that's probably a touchdown game right now, with App having being favored by a touchdown, if we're being fair. I think there's a lot of returning. Their question mark for me for App is going to be their quarterback play for sure. But that's the but their defense is going to be very, very good. We'll see how that plays. You look at the South Carolina game, huge. You look at the at Marshall game, huge. And you look at the for those three. And then you have the Charleston Southern game. The non-conference schedule for East Carolina this year is really difficult. I'm not saying that it's murder's row for sure, because it's not like Alabama and Clemson. But thank you, Bubba. Bubba's letting us know the spread opened at 13.5 and it's down to 11.5. I hadn't seen it recently, so thank you. Bubba's our numbers guy, as you know, Sonny.
He's got it all. Hey, I'm glad we know now. I mean, so what's the spread right now for Appalachian?
11.5.
11.5. Appalachian's favored.
Yeah, I think it's a touchdown game. I believe that I think you definitely should take the points. Certainly, I think that's a little high, but I'm not a betting guy. I'm not Vegas, but that game right there is a bowl game right there. And you look at that, Sonny, you look at the second game, that South Carolina game. South Carolina and East Carolina, if they want to make a bowl, whoever wins that game has got a better chance of winning a bowl. You look at South Carolina's schedule, they have their obviously conference schedule with the SEC is very difficult. You have Shane Beamer coming in. He's a great coach, son of a legendary coach, Frank Beamer, kind of like the situation you had with Skip Holtz being the son of Lou Holtz. However, that's a very, as Lou Holtz found out, and Skip Holtz, that's a very difficult job. And, right. But they know that that's a must win. East Carolina, that East Carolina, South Carolina game, folks, I'm not hyping it up. That is a huge game for both programs. And guess what? That for us, that's week two. That's not middle of the season kind of thing. That's week two. And you look at the at Marshall game, they're very good. Charleston Southern, don't take them for granted. I think we'll win that game, but don't. But you look at, and then you have the conference schedule. So Phil still has his Sonny as a 7-5 team, one of his most improved lists, a bowl team. We'll take that. How do you feel about that? You're a former player. You follow the program extremely close. Do you think we're a bowl team this year?
I
don't know if we lost Sonny or maybe the delay, but can you hear me, Jay?
Can you hear me there?
Yeah, I can hear you now.
Okay. Sorry, I had a phone call coming through. I just buzzed them off. So I think, you know, objectively looking at, you know, of course we want to win the conference and win the national championship, all those things, right? But I mean, from where we were, being objective and being realistic, I think a very realistic goal is to go to a bowl game. I think right. That's what this team should shoot for. You know, I think, you know, there needs to be more steps if we want to win a conference championship, and maybe that will happen. But I think a realistic goal that, you know, we need to achieve, but also one that, you know, should be in the sights is to go to a bowl game and have a winning record. And I think this team has the potential to win 7 or 8 games, but I really think it's going to depend on that non-conference schedule. You know, yeah. The Marshall game, just like you said, Marshall, Appalachian State, South Carolina, those are going to be the games that can really swing the season. And especially for a team, you know, that hasn't won here recently, big, the past couple of years, having that confidence at the beginning of the season is so important to kind of catapult you. Because if you go 2-0, 3-0 at the start, you can ride that wave of momentum. But when your team hasn't gone to a bowl, and you know, if you get tripped up or you're a slow starting team, it's much harder to climb that mountain, you know, without having that momentum.
Well, if we played in a weak league, then you could say, well, Jay, we'll be fine even with that. But the problem is, if you do the math and you look at that schedule, the conference is very tough. So you're exactly right. I tell you one thing, if they lose the first three games of the season, and Houston would be very upset for me to say this, Mike Houston, but it's going to be extremely difficult. I'm not saying it's not possible, but if you go 1-3, I think you don't make a bowl. It's going to be extremely difficult. Anything's possible. I think you have to – I think realistically to go to a bowl, you have to at least be 500 in non-conference. you have to get one of those, the between Marshall, South Carolina, and App State, you have to win at least one of those games, don't you think, Sonny? One out of three there?
Marshall, South Carolina, and Appalachian State?
Yeah, you have to win one of those three, I think. You have to go 2-2, and then you would have to win four out of the eight conference games. That's keeping things, in my opinion, that's what you're going to have to do. Obviously, yeah. You want to win on 12, but if you're right about being realistic, I think that if you go 0-3 against those three squads, in other words, 1-3 in non-conference, then you got to find five games. I think it's going to be really – not that it's not possible, but you have to win 5 out of 7. That's going to be really difficult to do, in my opinion. I mean,
Yeah, sorry, Dave. I mean, I think with that schedule, if we're clicking, we could go 4-0. But I also think that schedule's tough enough, you could go 1-3. You know, if you're not sprinting from the start. So I mean, you know, you hate counting losses, but I think if you can go 2-2 there, that'll be very, very fair, and you know, you'll put yourself in a position. But it's to me, it's all about those, you know, it's the you know, South Florida game, it's the Appalachian State game, it's the Marshall. Those are games that are swing games, you know, that we need to win those type of games, because, you know, we know UCF is going to be tough. We know some of those teams are going to be tough. That doesn't mean we can't upset them or win those games. But this league, the biggest difference now compared to, you know, 6 or 7 years ago, or even when I played, was the American is a real league. Conference USA, yeah, there were easy W's in that league. But this league, I mean, you look at the teams that are even down at the bottom, and they have high hopes this year. So it's going to be tough. But the teams to me that play the best defense and have the offensive line, you know, if you can control the line of scrimmage in this league, you're going to have a high success rate.
And Jay, I want to talk about, and you always think I'm kissing up to you. I'm not. The tight end room, you know, under Scotty Montgomery, they said, Dave, what is your
– I love the tight end room.
Of course. But my thing was, Jay, there's two things. When people say about Montgomery, what didn't you like about Montgomery? First of all, and I would be real with him, the practices were very soft. We were not hitting ones on, you know, one-on-ones. You know, it was just very difficult and depressing to cover a team that you love so much. And knowing that even though I'm not a football guy, I have coached football at the high school level, and knowing that you got to hear the popping of the pads. And anyway, and the other thing that I always talked about was, just because you put a guy at tight end doesn't mean you have a tight end room. And under Montgomery, I don't understand why in the world you wouldn't have legit tight ends. And the history of our school, you're a perfect example, Bryce. You know, a lot of those guys coming through there was a lot of great tight ends that played at East Carolina. And then you bring Montgomery in, and there was like no tight end room. You could have like a blank open room there, so to speak. But what are your thoughts now with Coach Houston, year three? There's a lot of talent in your room, my friend. Well, I think we lost Jay for a second. We'll get him back for sure. But man, there are, Bubba mentioned, so I want to give Bubba a shout out, 13 commits so far, and around half or more are in the trenches. So for offensive line and defensive line. So Bubba, you were always spot on there. Jay, welcome back in. Jay.
Sorry, I had a glitch.
That's all right. That's all right. I was just talking about, you got to be proud of the fact that tight end room, there is so much, my friend, there are so much talent at that position now. And I tell you one thing that I've always said, and I want to get your thoughts because you're a tight end. If you don't have tight ends, you can't run the football. And Mike Houston is a defensive guy, and he knows about running the football. And Donnie Kirkpatrick knows about blocking and the importance of a tight end to block. But you've got guys that are like a traditional tight end that can block. You've got guys like Brian Gag, their former quarterbacks that are coming in there, that maybe they're, I mean, it's to me probably the deepest we've seen since your time, or certainly 2015. Yeah. But how about Bubba wants me to mention Aaron Jarman from Temple. Here's a guy that wanted to play for the Pirates from North Lenore, Sonny, and nobody gives him the time of day. He goes up to Temple. Now he's transferred back, and he is the real deal one. He's a perfect example of a traditional tight end, right?
Yeah, I mean, and you said it, him coming in, that's a huge boost. But the depth, I mean, the Pirates can go four deep at that position. Yep. And, I mean, it's so important to have tight ends that can block and catch, because who's going to cover the tight end? If you're a linebacker, you can't cover. If you have a versatile tight end, you can't cover him with a linebacker. Safety can't cover. It's a mismatch in the middle of the field, and it's an easy target for the quarterback. You've got a tight end that can block, then they're going to be blocking linebackers. We used to crush linebackers. I mean, that's what you do if you got that position and that's solid. And you can run play action. You can run multiple sets. And you look at all the teams that are winning national championships. Alabama uses tight ends. You know, you look at Florida. I mean, all these teams that really win, if it's in the fourth quarter, you need to run the ball or get in the goal line. You know, that was one of my complaints about, you know, the Lincoln Riley here in Ruffin McNeil is, you know, if we had to run the ball, we couldn't because we're running the spread all the time. And I know we have big offensive games, but I just think I'm a very big believer that you've got to be able to run the ball and use a tight end to have success. And I think this year we're going to have an opportunity to be really strong in that position group.
I tell you what, I'm really excited. I tell you one player I'm watching very closely. He, of course, Charlotte native. He goes Mallard Creek. He goes to Oklahoma with Lincoln Riley. I'm telling you, folks, you better watch out for Ryan Jones. I'm telling you right now, Ryan Jones, unless he gets trouble off the field, I don't think he will, or in the classroom, but I'm telling you right now, Ryan Jones is going to be huge for the Pirates. He is a tremendous athlete. I would say if he works really hard, I really believe that he's going to give us a couple good years at tight end. He wants to play that position, Jay, on the offensive side, but he's a guy that is, to me, that's a playmaker. He has a position not only to do a great job blocking, but also he's going to be, and I'll say this, and it sounds like I'm hyping him. I'm not his agent. I don't get paid by Sonny or anybody else. If I see talent, I'm going to say it. But he's a guy to watch out for. I think he could be a big-time mismatch when it comes to the defense. And you know how much I love the defense, Jay, but I tell you what, Holton Ahlers has a ton of weapons this year, and especially when you add more to the depth of the tight end position.
He does. I mean, and you look at the offensive skill groups, and not only is there talent at the top, but there's depth. So there's going to be a lot of guys pushing each other, and that's going to breed that competition that you want, guys getting better. And then if there are injuries or things comes up, you know, they're going to have that next man up mentality. And depth is so important in football because we know the season goes on, guys are going to go down. So you've got to have talent behind just the starters. So, when I look at the offensive side of the ball, we've got enough at running back position. We've got enough in the quarterback position. We've got enough, you know, the skill positions. It's going to come down to, can we run the ball? Can we win at the line of scrimmage?
Right.
And then, you know, with Holton, he's got the experience. He's got the weapons. You know, if you can dominate up front and have a quarterback that protects the football, you're going to win a lot of games, even if you don't have a lot of skill position talent. And when I look at the Pirates, I think there's a ton of talent at the skill position. So we just have to win up front and protect the football. And I think this offense is going to do big things.
And I think with Donnie Kirkpatrick, another thing, and then I want to have another topic to talk with and name, image, and likeness too, before we let you go. I know your time is limited tonight, but we'll have you on definitely next month, and where we can have like Jason Holter for a long time to break down the team and stuff. But for me personally, with the situation with the Pirates, I think that, mark my words, I think Donnie K and Mike Houston trust Holton Ahlers a lot, and I think they're going to open up the playbook even more this year. And I tell you what, he's a playmaker. The kid is very strong. I don't think he's going to have an issue with the mess we dealt with COVID-19. You're looking like right now, I definitely feel like that we're going to with it when it comes to Holton Ahlers. Don't you think that they're going to open up the playbook? I mean, I know you're not coaching there, but I mean, the guy's been there 100 years. If they don't open up the playbook now, open the playbook.
Well, I mean, I think the biggest thing is they're going to give him more opportunities because of his experience, the trust factor, and also his knowledge of the offense. When you have that many game reps, that many practice reps, you're going to be like a coach on the field. So, yeah, I do expect this offense to expand. And I also think that it's going to expand with formations, motions, different kind of pre-snap things to confuse a defense. Because when you have an experienced quarterback that knows how to get everybody lined up and knows where everyone has to be, that's such a huge advantage. So, I mean, not only do I think the playbook will be expanded because of his experience and the talent, I think there's so many things you can do with him, whether that's calling plays at line of scrimmage or, like I said, things to confuse the defense pre-snap, which, you know, maybe the play may be the same play as last year, but they do a couple things pre-snap differently to make it look different and make it more complex and confusing, which will really benefit the offense. So I do expect that this season.
No question about it. And I know you can stay with us maybe a little bit longer. Yeah. One of the things that comes to mind is name, image, and likeness has been a big thing. I want to get your thoughts on that because you've been in the locker room before. One of the things that Kyle makes a great point, do you think, I'll ask the question, he's off tonight, but do you think that this is going to create some division in the locker room? For example, you have Holton, we're talking about Holton Ahlers. I love the guy. The kid is outstanding as a person, player. We think a lot of his dad. You got a guy like him, star of the team, on and on and on. Then you have a Jay Sunhalter of the world who has a lot of talent, but the position itself of tight end, to me, one of the reasons why I like it is because it's so underrated. It's so important, so underrated. Do you think there's going to be a division on the team? Like, hey, I block for you every single day. You're getting thousands of dollars and I'm getting nothing. Do you think that's a problem? Or some of the things I'm seeing is where teammates are happy that these guys are getting money.
Yeah. I mean, I just think overall, not East Carolina. I just think overall, I think that will affect some teams. I mean, I do because, you know, if you've got somebody, you know, let's just say you're at Southern Cal and you're making $15,000 a month and, you know, let's say you're a quarterback and then, you know, your left guard is making nothing and the quarterback's arrogant, then there may be some issues there, you know? I don't think it'll be that way everywhere. I don't think it'll be that way at East Carolina. But I do think at some schools there could be issues. I mean, I think that would be natural. And I think it's going to be interesting to see the structure, the discipline of certain teams, because this is a whole new kind of animal that's going to be let out this year. And, you know, I don't think that'll be – I generally don't think it'll be an issue at East Carolina or, you know, most of the schools in this conference. But I do foresee at some schools that that could be problematic.
No doubt. And I think that one of the things that we talked about earlier in the show, but for me personally, I have a problem and maybe it's but I have a problem when you hear, you know, Coach Saban earlier, I think it was today, and he's talking about the fact that you can see Bryce Young making seven figures. Do I have a problem with kids making money? Absolutely not. I have no issues with guys like, you know, when Pete was talking about earlier from Navy, from the midshipman play-by-play voice, when he's talking about a guy going out to a car dealership, say Holton Ahlers goes out to a car dealership, he signs autographs, gets money for it, takes pictures with folks, gets money for it. I have no problem with that. But just to think about a guy from Alabama can be a millionaire, you know, while he's playing football, when you expect those kind of guys to be millionaires because they're going to be, you know, five-star guys going into college and they're going to be going to Alabama and they're going to be playing on the big stage and making big plays and then making it to the next level. You expect that, but not at this.
Right. At the college level. Yeah. I mean, I think it's going to turn in, I mean, my personal opinion is I think it'll turn into issues at some of those schools. Cause if everybody knows there's a Alabama booster that'll pay you X amount if you come there, and, you know, he'll get you an endorsement deal. I think there's going to be a lot of that going on at some of those big schools. But I agree with you. I mean, I think everybody has a right to make money. I mean, I think it's great for everybody. I mean, America, you know, we can make money. I think that's awesome. But I also think that, you know, it's going to create problems too if it's not handled the right way or if there's not the structure there. And that's one of the things about, you know, college sports is, you know, before I know stuff was happening underneath the table and there's some dirty stuff. Yeah. But, you know, it was supposed to be, you know, everyone kind of on the same playing field. And, you know, whether you agree with that or not, you know, that's what it was supposed to be. Now it's kind of like everything's opened up. And I think that's great. But, like, I mean, I also think there's going to be issues with it, too.
No question about it. I want to get your take on because
I wish I was playing now. I don't know if I would have got much money. I could have tried.
Hey, Sonny, I wish you were the great athlete that you still are.
I would have shared it with you, Dave.
Hey, I would love that. I'll be your agent.
Sorry, I missed that. Could you say it again, please?
Sorry, that was crazy. But as far as the college football playoff, I want to get your thoughts. We asked Pete. I was really upset. I understand why he said it with Dabo Swinney talking about there's not 12 teams good enough to be in the playoff. I understand his perspective of, you know, Clemson and we're in it every single year. And if you expand it, that's more chances that he's not going to be the top dog anymore. Or what if, but you know, Jay, the one thing that bothers me about college football, I'm not anti Dabo Swinney. I love what he's done at Clemson. I'm happy for that fan base that is one of the best fan bases in all of America. Okay. So I don't want to sound like I'm hating or on Nick Saban in Alabama. But aren't we tired, if you're a college football fan, and you and I right now don't even have to look at Phil, and I do have my Phil Steele right, actually right here near me, my Bible, if you will, the college football Bible. But you don't even have to get these magazines preseason, man. You don't have to do any prep work. You and I can both rattle off 4 to 6 teams every year, the same ones that have a chance to play for the national championship. Why not have it where – why is it such a bad thing that an East Carolina, a Coastal Carolina, Liberty, fill in the blank of a team that's not a quote-unquote brand-name team, that if they somehow upset Clemson, whoever it is, Notre Dame, Ohio State, Penn State, one of those teams, Georgia, Oklahoma, if they upset that and they won the national championship, why is that such a bad thing? That is great for college football to have a Cinderella team. Maybe think about East Carolina. If we had something like a Peach Bowl, right? Something maybe for us that happens once a generation. If we have a team like that and we beat a Clemson, we beat an Alabama, they would be talking about that for not only for East Carolina fans, they'd be talking about that for years. That's what Clemson and Alabama don't want. They don't want the underdog story. That's what makes sports great. When you have the how about when Appalachian State how about the Appalachian States of the world? When they went to the Big House and beat Michigan, that was huge. That was great for college sport. It was not great for Michigan, I know, that they got beat in their own house, in the Big House. But it was great for college football that that happened. And I tell you what, I'm a believer that if – you know, if it's 1 out of 100 chances and we beat Clemson, for example, at East Carolina, we beat them. But that's what they don't want. The other thing is, I was talking about, you're in the Raleigh area. The NC States of the world and North Carolinas of the world, they haven't won, and I'm not knocking them, but I'm just making my case for why they don't want East Carolina at the table. Because they haven't won an ACC title between those two schools. One was 1979, I believe that was NC State, and Carolina, I believe it won in 1980. They haven't. I was in elementary school, Jay, the last time they won an ACC championship. Okay, and I'm not knocking them, but that's exactly why they don't want us to be the expansion of 12 teams, because they feel like they're going to get left behind. The ACC is going, except for Clemson, and with this realignment, who knows? Clemson might be in the SEC for long. You never know. You know what I'm saying? Like, and then if they lose Clemson and they don't have Notre Dame in the conference because they're independent and they played last year because they had to, if you don't have a Clemson in the world, if Florida State, Miami, if they stay the way they are, I think they're going to get better. But if you don't have them improving, then the ACC will get left behind as a conference.
Yeah, and it's so funny because you said it all there. Like, it's almost like every school or every conference has a different agenda. You know, like if you're NC State or North Carolina, you feel one way. If you're Clemson, you're one way. If you're East Carolina, you're another way. I mean, I think what they're doing is they're trying to get more teams included, and it's been so lopsided. It's been, you said, those same six teams that it's hurt the ratings. Yep. And, you know, even though, you know, ratings are great, it's hurt the ratings. It's hurt the, you know, this is going to give more buzz. There's going to be able to be, they're going to have those shows throughout the season. You know, the ranking shows where it's going to involve a lot more teams. So there's going to be more eyes on it. So that's what it's all about. And I do think it's good in a lot of ways. The only thing that I don't like about it is I love the fact that, you know, the regular season, every game is so important. And I still think it'll definitely be that way. But, you know, before some of these games, you know, if you lost it, you're out of it. Now some of these teams could still lose, you know, two or three, and maybe even still be in it. So that's the one part that I don't like. But that won't, you know, that's not going to affect every team. Because most schools will still need to go, you know, either undefeated or lose one to be able to make it. I think the SEC would have a little bit more leeway probably, but I do like the fact that it's going to open things up to more teams, and it hopefully will balance things out, because I'm kind of sick of the Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State show every year.
Yeah. And another thing is, like I was saying before, I was telling Pete, I really believe that argument about watering down the regular season is bogus. I'll tell you why. Because if you know that East Carolina and Navy are playing on November 20th, and I use that example earlier with him, and I'll use it with you, and you know the only way that we have a shot to be at the table, to have that national championship picture, to be in that conversation, we've got to go through Navy. You got to win the last two games, Jay, of the season. You got to beat the Cincinnati's of the world. Last two games of the season. If you know those two games are on the line for the, as far as you're going bowling, no question about it. But the difference of going bowling versus in that conversation of a national championship, you don't think those conference games are important. And all of a sudden, one of those schools, whoever loses, they're going to have that school circled next year. You better believe we're going to beat Navy next year, because they knocked us out of the national playoff, or East Carolina knocked us out of the national playoff. So I think that I don't believe that that's a true argument about the season watered down. I think where the season watered down is when you have the situation where these Power Five schools play a FCS opponent in November. I have no problems with them playing in September, because that helps FCS programs get a check, and we all want them to survive the football thing. But I do have a problem when they play them in November, when to me, it's like a throwaway game. And no offense to FCS programs, we have no problems with them playing early, but just not like the week before Thanksgiving when they should be playing better competition.
Well, and I agree with you. That's ridiculous that they play those games.
Yeah,
you know, at that point this season, I mean, it's the whole SEC has an extra bye week when they're playing the cream puffs. But on your point, I agree with you completely, and I actually agree with, you know, with the other guy, Ken from Navy. The point that I think that I agree with you. I don't think it's going to be watered down, but I do think a team like Alabama, you know, I think some of those top teams now are going to have a little bit more leeway, whereas most teams won't. Most teams, to me, will still have to win, you know, every game, or it's going to be do or die every week. But I think a team like Alabama, if you're in the SEC, I mean, if they have a normal year, they pretty much can go 10-2 and they're going to make it. And most, you know what I'm saying? Because the strength of their schedule, because they're Alabama, you know, before they either had to go 11-1 or 12-0, most likely. Now, I mean, they're going to get in, and that's fine. You know, I mean, that SEC is a great league, but whoever's up at the top there, they're going to get. You know, they're going to have that league will have a little bit more leeway. I don't think all the others will, but I mean, I could see the SEC. You know, they're getting two teams in when there's four. You know, they're probably going to get three in now, I would imagine.
Yeah, well, another thing too is there's some people, another caveat to that side issue is that people are talking about, we had a guest on last night that we interviewed, Dave Barnett. I don't agree with getting rid of, and I'll say this, I like having the college champ, the conference championship games. I think that if you had a fair playoff, put the conference champion in, and people don't like that. But speaking of making a regular season matter, look, man, you put that if you know, like back in our day, before our time, I should say, you and I are a little bit different age, obviously, but back in the 70s, man, in basketball, as you, the state NC State Maryland game of, I think it was a 73-74. I was really, really young. Don't remember it. Maryland stayed home. NC State won the ACC tournament. And that game changed the NCAA tournament because Maryland was really, really good. And the Lynn Elmores of the world and John Lucas's of the world and Lefty Giselle team was really good. For me personally, you want to talk about drama. You want to talk about hype. If you have the college champion, conference champion of the SEC, and you have all the other schools, and then you may have some teams that are second best in the league that make it. But, I mean, to have the Cincinnati's of the world, say last year, if you're going by last year's standards, Cincinnati would have made the playoff, and you have all the different schools. And for me personally, if we're number six best conference, we get the, to me, number six would make sense to have the number six seed. And I know people are going to cry bloody murder on that, but I believe the conference champions, my point is, I'm of the school of thought conference championships should matter. If you win your conference, is a big deal. And to take away the conference championship games, I guess you could say the regular season champion would be what it was. Maybe that's, you know, part of it. But I like having those conference championship games. It makes for more content, and you have a chance to some people say, well, you stump your toe. Well, if you do, you do. That's part of having a tournament, right, and that's part of a championship game. Just because you're the best team doesn't mean you're going to win it. But what are your thoughts on getting rid of conference championship games?
Well, I agree with you. I mean, I think that conference championship game, I mean, that's part of being a champion, and it's so important. I mean, you can kind of go through and win it all, but you got to win the whole thing. I think that those are important, and I think, you know, for East Carolina, you know, let's just say, like, you've got a chance. I mean, now you can get in the playoff, and you've got a chance to do a damage. If you're a player right now, you've got a chance to win the national championship. Before, I mean, even though, yeah, you know, UCF or Cincinnati or, you know, whoever had a chance to get in, realistically, there wasn't going to be a chance to get into the top four. Now you can get in the playoff, yep, and, you know, and then you can prove it, you know, whether you're good enough or not good enough. All those arguments before, you know, is the number two or three SEC team better than, you know, certain Pac-12 champion or, you know, Cincinnati, right, you know, those are out the window now. You're going to have an opportunity, and it makes such a huge difference when you have a realistic opportunity as far as your training, as far as your practice, as far as when you're playing games, to know you got an opportunity not only to win a national championship. I mean, you got to be good enough to do that, but the big thing is to get in the playoff, just to get a seat at the table, and then, you know, and then let it unfold from there. But that's a huge advantage now for these players and for the league to have that expansion.
It's gonna be a lot of talk right now, Jay, with the before we let you go, we got the SEC media days, we got ACC, Big 10, Big 12 this last week, all the media days for sure. Do you have any final thoughts before we let you go? We're certainly going to have you back in a few weeks before we have the – we'll dive in more, but we don't want to bore everybody. We've been talking – not you, but we've been going at it pretty long here. So,
yeah, just a couple thoughts from me. So, first of all, sorry for being late. I was on another call, so sorry, everybody. No, but so good to talk to you guys. Can't wait to talk again. And, gosh, I can't wait for football season here. And I think ECU is going to have a great opportunity this year. I'm excited to see the improvement because I really think all the hard work is going to pay off, and the fans are going to be excited to see the product on the field. And, you know, just back to, you know, the we talked beginning at the ECU productions and the broadcasts this season. Congratulations to Greg Pierce on his promotion that got announced today. Such a great honor and great opportunity for him. And he's put in so much work, and he's a close friend of mine and the best guy you'll ever meet. So I'm so happy for him and just everything going on at ECU. Can't wait for it to get started, because I think big things are going to be happening. And that momentum, that, you know, that ECU football spirit, I think is really going to be huge this year, because I think this team is going to have an opportunity to do great things.
And we need to get Greg Pierce on the show. So I'm glad you said that. We need to have him on. And Bubba, let's get him on. Speaking of content, I want to remind fans, we have a great one. Bubba had a chance to sit down, as I mentioned earlier, the show with Chris Foster, the new running backs coach. Very excited about, we talked about the tight end room. The running backs room is going to be tremendous. Jay, we had, he did a great job. I know, I can't wait to listen to the interview, and he'll be putting that out, I know, on our YouTube channel and all over social media. You'll have a chance to listen to that interview. So be waiting for that. Be ready for that. Also, we have Coach Dooley, Jay, coming on. We're going to be interviewing him tomorrow, so we'll have him on. And Gabriel Mikulas, he actually, Gabe actually now, and Mikulas is actually now living in Charlotte, so we'll be having him on Thursday night, Jay, so make sure you tune in for that. If you're a basketball fan, rather, Joe Dooley is going to get it done in year four. Very confident that post-COVID we're going to turn the corner. And we'll be talking to Coach Dooley about that and much more. And we also want to remind fans to get your season tickets, 1-800-DOLLY-ECU. I think we're at the 12,000. We're right at the 12,000 mark, Jay. Folks, go get your tickets, ecupirates.com. We're going to have our big promotion. We're giving away a pair of season tickets next month. So I would definitely say make sure you subscribe to the YouTube channel. That's a huge hit. Hence, make sure you do that. Jay, buddy, appreciate you very much. Before we let you go, have you had any kind of assignments? Do you know what you're going to be doing for ESPN this year?
So, yeah, I don't know exactly the schedule, but I am going to the Big South Media Day and then SoCon Media Day next week. So I'll be there to kind of get some good updates from those leagues, and excited to work some games this fall and watch some great football. So I'll have more updates here as we get closer to the season, but can't wait to get started. And thanks so much for having me, Dave, as always. Bubba, thank you so much. Tell Kyle I said hey, and great work and good talking with you.
All right, thanks, buddy, appreciate it. We'll let you get back to your day night job, and we'll have you on in a few weeks to break things down talking ECU and college football. Okay,
perfect.
Can't wait. All right, man, have a great night, buddy.
You too,
appreciate you very much. All right, Jay Sunhalter there, former tight end under the Skip Holtz era. Certainly, we love that guy. Appreciate all that he does for college football and coming on for us a lot for our previews. We'll have that, of course, in our we'll have a wrap-up. We have the preview of each week for football and wrap-up shows for sure. All right, we'll get out of here. Appreciate Pete Medhurst and Jay Sunhalter. Bubba Rosenbaum, dude, thank you so much for all that you do for the show. It means a lot. I know he's producing behind the scenes. Until next time, you've been watching and listening to The Sports Objective. Good night, everybody, and go Pirates.
Yo, what's going on, y'all? This is Udon Cheek, assistant track and field coach at East Carolina University. Hey, you are plugged into the Sports Objective podcast. If you are a fan, you are plugged into the right place. And if you're really a fan, you will share that link. My heart is purple and gold. I'm a pirate down to my soul. And I don't back down, not at all. Find out when the cannons explode. Boom!